Hey there, nutty people. In the late 1990s, the development team at Rare started to design a standard 3D platform game in order to compete with the success of Mario 64. It starred a cute squirrel mascot named Conker and was described early on as a platform game that took place in a Disney movie. In the end, though, what was released was a mature-rated video game named Conker's Bad Fur Day. Today, we're going to take a look at how an innocent woodland creature became a foul-mouthed, bear-guzzling hero. It's a roller coaster ride of a tale, with humor, questionable decisions, and some unforgettable moments that have us still laughing years later. So if you're a fan of twisted tales, quirky characters, and irreverent humor, you're in for a treat. So come along and let's embark on this nutrageous adventure together on today's trip down memory card lane. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I hope these words find you well. Hello and welcome to the 184th episode of our video game history podcast, A Trip Down Memory Card Lane. Each week, we'll tell you a story about one topic relevant to the current week in gaming history. It can be about a game, and likely the people who created it. It can be about a gaming console and the technology that allowed it to happen. More often than not, it's also about the companies that bring all of this together and make it all happen. Our stories are all-encompassing. While bringing you each story, we hope to teach you something new about the topic, what it took from the world as its inspiration, or what it gave back to the world in its legacy. Today, we are going to learn about the 2001 rude and crude platformer Conker's Bad Fur Day. I'm David Kasson, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, who has seen the great mighty Pooh in concert 100 gajillion times. He's my brother, Rob Kasson. Rob, what's your favorite song by the great mighty Pooh?
It's I Am the Great Mighty Pooh.
That's a great one. That's a fan favorite around here.
It should be, Dave. It's fantastic.
It's the best Pooh opera song ever created.
Undeniably.
Can't deny it. You've seen them. You know it. There's no one that's a bigger expert in Pooh than you.
You got that right, Dave. That's so, what I'm known for.
So tell us, what are some of the highlights from this week in gaming history?
Well, Dave, kicking it off with a classic. In Japan, 24 years ago, this week in March of 2000, the PlayStation 2 was released.
That was a good system, huh?
It was a fantastic system.
Isn't that your era? Aren't you PlayStation 2?
That's what got me into it.
Yeah. That's
all of our favorite games, Grand Theft Auto and the Need for Speeds of the day and Mr. Mosquito, which we did an episode on. With weird games.
We did, very much.
Uh-huh. So, very big one there. And 18 years ago, in 2008, Typing of the Dead 2 was released. And you may recall that we did a whole episode on the typing game genre back in episode 131.
2008 was 16 years ago, but that's my mistake.
Oh, math is hard.
Yeah, well, that's not your fault. I did write it, so I'll take ownership for it. We can move on.
That we can. Or, 16 years ago in 2008, Typing of the Dead 2 was released.
I'm leaving that in there. Why not?
And Dave, we're wishing happy 15th birthday to Empire Total War, which released in 2009.
Math checks out.
It does. We did a whole episode on the beginning of that series and talked about our own experiences with it back in episode 42. So go check it out.
I have played too much Total War.
And my experiences? Sorry, no spoilers.
Okay.
And Dave, you may know that it's been 15 years since the release of Resident Evil 5.
That was a solid release in the Resident Evil series.
I think it was the last before they switched the... Or no, they did Resident Evil 6 before. Yeah, that's right.
Six was weird for me. And then 7's when they switched to the current like Biohazard stuff. So
yeah, 5 was a really good one. I remember doing that one because I believe you could do co-op in that one.
You could. Yep.
So sure yeah, could. I definitely did some good art, some RE5 time.
It was designed as a co-op game, if I'm not mistaken. Like you could play it co-op, or it had really just awful AI because it was made as a two-player game. So
that would explain a lot. I always just chalked it up to RE's bad AI system, but it would make more sense that it was designed to be co-op and it wasn't just bad AI. It's just play with friends because it's better.
It's bad AI, but that's neither here nor there, so.
Fair enough. And for those who are interested in Resident Evil, we talked about the origins of that series back in episode 30. So, go give it a listen if that's your thing.
Yeah, we've done RE1 and we've done RE2 in a late, like, more recently. So we have multiple episodes on Resident Evil if you want to,
Yeah, with special guests.
That's right. We do have guests for a Resident Evil episode, so.
Well, Dave, 14 years ago, Battlefield Bad Company 2 came out. It's one of those rare single-player campaigns in the Battlefield series.
Did you put time into Bad Company?
I absolutely did. If I am not mistaken, Bad Company, at least the first, was the first in the Battlefield series to have the destructive environments.
That is absolutely true. Yes.
And that was the most amazing thing back then. I remember spending so much time on those maps, just blowing everything up just because I could.
And now that's what I do when we play together, and that's not actually the goal.
Exactly.
Yep.
You're getting it out of your system because you didn't do it enough in Bad Company.
I don't think I played them at all. I mean,
well, then
I,
you didn't get any in Bad Company.
Yeah. I have the first one for Xbox 360 or Xbox. I don't know if I have the second one, but I don't remember putting any time into the Bad Company games, unfortunately. So,
oh, I definitely do. That smiley face logo. I think there was a grenade in it, too. Like it was a grenade with a smiley face, maybe.
Yeah.
Anywho. This one's shocking to me because I didn't realize how long ago it is, but 7 years ago in 2017, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild was released. Crazy how long ago it was. But
7 years.
It was definitely one of the start of one of the greatest Zelda titles of all time. Yeah. Arguably, of course, but... No.
I think most people would consider the two modern ones to be among the top of the whole
I suppose thing. I should say subjectively.
Okay, fair enough. So
I do enjoy them myself, don't get me wrong. But I'm sure there are Zelda purists out there who would heavily disagree with us.
Probably.
And just for the fans on this last one here, Dave, I have to let them know about your new fascination 2 years ago.
What's that?
That would be your Streets Cats race.
Oh, yeah, that one.
And for those that don't know, it's a cat racer that advertises itself as the funniest adventure you'll find today.
I mean, it's amusing, no doubt about it.
The developers swear they know kitties running around and have built multiple levels for cats to avoid obstacles while running through the city.
You can't go wrong. It's got cats, so...
You got that right. And it's racing, Dave. Cats yes. Racing. Come on. The very zoomies, true. Boy.
Very, very true.
So, Dave, that's it for this week in gaming history. So why don't you kick it on off with our topic of the day?
So today we're looking at a game from Rare, and we've covered the history of Rare before in various episodes, probably in the most detail in our Donkey Kong Country episode, which was 117. As usual, though, we'll kind of give you the Cliff Notes version to catch you up on where we are. So, Rare started out in 1982 as a video game developer slash publisher named Ultimate Play the Game. Now, Ultimate was responsible for releasing a whole series of successful games for the ZX Spectrum, the BBC Micro, and the Commodore 64, among others. Their best-selling titles were named Jetpack and Saberwolf. They both sold over 300,000 copies in 1983 and 1984, which is awesome for, you know, sales at that time. And at some point during all the success, they got their hands on an imported console from Japan, which was the Nintendo Famicom. And in the Famicom, the studio, its leaders, who are Tim and Seth Stamper, the Stamper brothers, the leaders saw the future of gaming. But Nintendo was like notorious for not working with others. They didn't really do third party or second party like gaming. So they took a risk. They reverse engineered the Famicom and figured out how to make it work, figured out how to make several tech demos for the Nintendo Famicom, which, frankly, Nintendo didn't think anyone was capable of doing. And they took them to Nintendo. And to be fair, that could have gone either way, right? I mean, Nintendo could have shut the door in their face and sued them to high hell for, you know, reverse engineering their licensed product or so on and so forth.
It's definitely ballsy.
I mean, they could have been like, what are you doing? But instead, they were impressed. They entered into a partnership with Nintendo. Basically, Nintendo said, hey, make games for us with us. And Nintendo gave them, as a publisher, like an pretty much unlimited budget to produce games for the Famicom and the NES. They started out with a game called Slalom, a skiing title. They would eventually create over 60 titles for the NES and like some Game Boy adaptions. There's a lot of licensed stuff in there. There's ports in there, but there's some original games that Rare is pretty well known for. RC Pro AM was a game I played a lot of, a little racing game. Snake Rattle Roll is in there. Probably their best known game from the NES era is Battletoads.
Mm-hmm.
AKA one of the hardest games of all time. That's what it's
called. You got that right.
About the time that Nintendo was transitioning into the Super Nintendo era, you know, from 8-bit to 16-bit, Nintendo invested in the studio. They started out by buying like 25% of Rare, and they eventually slowly worked their way up to a 49% stake in Rare. So it was really only Rare and Nintendo that owned the studio, and they became what's known as, it's Rare, a second party developer for Nintendo, like a studio that is not Nintendo but develops solely for Nintendo type deal. So during the Super Nintendo era, they developed innovative tools, right? These tools allowed them to push the limits of the SNES hardware. They used SGI workstations to do 3D work in an era where no one was really doing 3D work. And basically that resulted in Donkey Kong Country, which is what we did an episode on. You know, they produced a Donkey Kong Country series, and those are, they're typically regarded as some of the best Super Nintendo games. I mean, they're always in that list, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely pretty damn good games. Spent a lot of time trying to do all of them.
Their other big series that they came out with during the era was the Killer Instinct fighting series. So
I do recall that. I never played it myself. I think I actually might even have the second one or one of them as a Nintendo 64 cartridge, but I've never played it.
Nice. So, yeah, so they made games. And during this time, Rare kind of blew up. You know, they had Nintendo's deep pockets at this point, right? So they could work on multiple projects and do whatever they wanted, and they had all the money and resources that one of the biggest video game companies in the world was bringing to them. So Rare really expanded as they went in to the 64-bit era, you know, while making games for Nintendo 64. And they did a lot of really well-known games here. One of the games they developed for the N64 was Blast Corps. I think that was their first one. We did an episode on what's probably one of their most popular games they've ever created, and that's GoldenEye 007, a fan favorite for multiplayer shooters, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's a fantastic game.
We did that episode. We did that at 52. That was our 1 year episode. That was just a long time ago. Wow.
That was definitely quite some time ago. Holy crap.
Episode 52. So yeah, they were blowing up. They were expanding and we were cruising on into the 64-bit era, right? So as the team was working their way into the 64-bit era, it was hard not to notice the success of Super Mario 64, right? Super Mario 64 was, I mean, if you weren't there, it's hard to describe, but it was revolutionary. Like, it was such a drastic leap from the previous generation to that, like, and it was 3D. That was 3D. That was the first time many of us had seen a legitimate, like, 3D platformer. It was absolutely amazing. Everybody wanted it. Everybody played it. It's arguably one of the best games of all time. It's definitely one of the most influential games of all time, right? So everyone was paying attention to Mario 64 as they went into the 64-bit era. And so, I mean, because money, every developer wanted to capitalize on this success, right? So Rare, like everyone else, wanted to compete with Mario 64, so they began to design what they referred to as a generic 3D platform adventure. So the team had just kind of gotten done making Diddy Kong Racing, and Diddy Kong Racing included a bunch of characters, one of which was a character called Conker the Squirrel. And they knew that they were going to use Conker in other games. He was a cute, cuddly mascot, and he was designed as a cute squirrel mascot in order to get the widest marketing appeal, basically. So they began to design this 3D platform adventure with Conker the Squirrel as the main character. The game was first revealed at the Electronic Entertainment Expo, E3, in June of 1997 under the name Conker's Quest. It was reported by journalists as a game that makes gamers feel as if they're playing through Disney's movie version of Bambi, where Conker collected nuts and battled against giants in huge landscapes. And then he's also joined by a female squirrel who assists him as he makes his way through the game. But the thing of it is that if you don't know Conker's Bad Fur Day, you should know that a Disney movie is the absolute furthest thing from what it became, right?
I would say so, Dave.
So let's talk about that, shall we?
Let's dive in.
There was a lot of feedback on these early versions of Conker, many of which, like the studio itself, compared the game to Mario 64. I mean, to be fair, everything was being compared to Mario 64. It literally set the standard for 3D platforming games. One particularly interesting bit of reporting noted that the cuteness of Conker would inevitably turn off older players. And in the same breath, the writer also criticized Conker for not being original enough while being compared to Mario. So they're hearing these voices in their head, right? Like, only kids are going to like this, and it's why is it, it's Mario, like, how is it special? And they're working through development of this 3D platformer, right? By E3 of the following year, 98, the game's title had changed. Now it was being presented as 12 Tales, Conquer 64. It was presumably renamed to prevent any confusion with another N64 title that was named Quest 64. The game was still being presented as a cute platformer. It was being showcased as a single player slash multiplayer platformer. You could play as either Conker or that female squirrel who was Barry, was her name. Conker's sections were going to be arcade style platformers, and Barry's would be puzzle stages. And you could either do single player switching back and forth, or you could actually team up in the multiplayer as a cooperative campaign. And, I mean, it was Rare. Rare really can't do no wrong, so feedback was positive, but it kept coming back to the same topics, right? It looks like all the other games. It's too kid-friendly. It doesn't stand out. Like, there's all these things that they're hearing over and over and over and over. And as this is all happening in the public eye, in the studio itself, the development of the game was not going very well. You know, by E3 2008 or 1998, by 1998, we're 2 years into the process. The game was originally scheduled to take 2 years to develop. The team was not happy. They were said to be bickering and fighting amongst themselves. There are members of the team in later interviews about this time period that said the game really wasn't any good at this point. Another said that there was a lot of content and fun ideas, but they weren't able to put it all together as a team and make it into a finished game. So this is all happening. The team is all getting this feedback, and they're just watching platformer after platformer after platformer being released, being compared to Mario 64, and then being brushed into nothingness, so to speak. So many other platformers during that time period barely made a dent. I couldn't tell you many of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I couldn't either.
To put this into perspective, I mean, there's another team at Rare making Banjo-Kazooie at the time. And so you also have the fact that, like, you have Banjo-Kazooie and another 3D platformer. And how do you tell those apart? Do they really need two Banjo-Kazooies, so to speak? You know?
I mean, I don't know. How well did Banjo-Kazooie 1 do?
Banjo-Kazooie did pretty good.
Well, there you go. Maybe a second one would have done pretty well, too.
Something had to give, right? Something had to change. The development wasn't going well. The feedback, while positive, pretty much indicated that it wasn't going to make a splash. And in turn, no doubt that made the development team feel like, what are we working towards, you know? Like, what? Duh. So there needed to be a change of direction. And that change of direction came at the suggestion of one of the artists who is responsible for pivoting 12 Tales, Conquer 64, into the game as we know it today. And that artist's name is Chris Seaver. So Chris had an idea for a day in the life game named Bad Fur Day. And it was going to be about Conquer trying to help others, but causing more problems while trying to do so. And as part of this pitch, he suggested that in turn, they make the game edgy, in terms of its violence specifically. So he takes this idea to Tim and Chris Stamper, along with his kind of vision, his idea of what he wants. You know, Stampers are the leaders of Rare, and they loved it. So he got promoted from artist to project lead, and they began to convert the work they had done into Conker's Bad Fur Day, taking all the work they did and turning it into something completely new. And speaking of making something completely new, have you ever considered making your own podcast? Do you have something clever and engrossing that you'd like to share with the world, but you really don't know how? Our friends at Zencastr have created an all-in-one podcasting suite of tools that makes it easier than ever to create your own podcast.
With Zencastr, it's super easy to record a podcast. Everyone logs in using their web browser, and you just start recording a high-quality podcast right away. It allows you to record up to 4K video with your guests, and with Zencastr's multi-layered backups, you always have the highest quality recordings, even if the connection is unstable.
And with Zencastr, you never have to worry about what you sound like. Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes all those ums and ahs, lets you set your own podcasting volume, gets rid of those awkward pauses, you can reduce background noise, you can like go down a menu and select all these things, and then in a single click of a button, it'll take care of it all for you.
And if the thought of podcasting overwhelms you because you think you need tons of different tools and services, relax. Those days are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place and distribute it to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations.
So if you'd like to start your own podcast, or maybe you want to take your current podcasting to the next level, we've got a deal for you. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use the offer code, our offer code, Memory Card Lane, all one word, Memory Card Lane, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid platform.
Sign up for Zencastr today, and you can experience the same ease in producing your own high-quality podcast as we do each week. Go out and share your ideas with the world.
So, Seaver's first action was changing one of the tasks in the game. It's a scene called The Wasp and the Queen Bee. Originally, the premise for The Wasp and the Queen Bee was that the wasps were just stealing a beehive. Pretty simple. But Seaver argued that that premise had no reason. Our punchline's behind it. So what use was it? So they decided to end that scene with the beehive having guns that were shooting at the wasps. And the Stampers loved the concept. They loved that change. And they told the team, do more of that. So that set the tone for the rest of development, right? It was a framework for missions moving forward. There would be an introduction, there would be an interaction of the mission, and then there would be an extreme punchline cutscene as a reward for completing the task. And admittedly, they had already put a lot of work in. They already had done a lot of programming, they had the main character. I mean, really, they just kind of changed the story, and then, of course, they had to fit what they had already done into it. And in changing the story, they obviously decided that mature humor would be an important element. So now we're in the year 2000, and we're more than 3 years into its development, and they're finally getting around to reworking what was 12 Tales Conquer 64 into Conquer's Bad Fur Day. 3 years in, they're just kind of completely starting over with everything.
It's going to be a long road ahead, ain't it?
I know. Seaver's focus really was making sure that the narrative complemented the gameplay mechanics. That was a really big deal for him. For example, the developers had originally planned for Conker to attack with a baseball bat, but that was changed to a frying pan because it justified the use of a comic sound effect of a metal object hitting something.
Nice. That's good. I mean, a metal bat wouldn't have sufficed, but you know.
I don't know. I like the dong of a frying pan better than the dink of a bat. So
okay, you got a point there.
So this kind of comedic decision making extended across the development of the game, extended to the level designers too. At first, up until this point, they were more so focused on the gameplay as opposed to the comedy. So, you know, as development carried on, they started focusing more on comedic premises that, you know, that made the levels come together. And in doing so, they found that they really liked parodies and they started to lean into them. A parody gave them a framework and gave them ideas on music design, sound design, and frankly, gameplay design around it, right? So one of the things that most people know about this game is that there are tons of references to pop culture throughout the game. Among the movies spoofed in this game are Star Wars, Terminator, Bram Stoker's Dracula, The Matrix, Apocalypse Now, Aliens, A Clockwork Orange, and Trading Places. There's multiple dialogue and ideas borrowed from the Monty Python series, the Mighty Pooh opera singer, and there are sections of fart noises that are music, definitely inspired from South Park.
Nice.
And they borrowed from the Jerky Boys too. Like, there's just a little bit of something for everyone mixed in there. You know, they had a programmer who wrote a language that had allowed for changes in the game structure to be done in a few seconds. So they literally could make changes on the fly. And they did. Only the introduction of the game was fully scripted. Everything else was said to be spontaneously conceived with only like a rough notion of each level to start with.
Wow. That's impressive.
I know. It's definitely, definitely, definitely impressive. The animators spent a lot of time on the small details when programming the game. Conker alone has 2,000 animations, and they put particular care into his tail. All in all, they managed to get about 2 hours of cutscenes into the game that helped tell its story. So, I mean, they put the work in, man.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, especially after having already created basically the whole game.
You know, they basically originally conceived the idea of the 3D platformer while they were developing Killer Instinct Gold, which was 1996. And so now we're here 4 years later in 2000, and they're still working on it, man. They're trudging along. Inevitably, Conker's Bad Fur Day was about 20% longer than they had originally envisioned, so they ended up actually having to cut content because they just ran out of time. They made a decision here, we're going to release it here, which would have been March of 2001, and so they had to just make it happen at that point, you know? And, you know, Nintendo ended up cutting content too that they found offensive. Rare was asked to cut content that referenced Pokemon. And they were asked to cut a joke that was made at the expense of the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK.
Well, damn.
There's evidence that of levels that didn't make it in. There's one stage which you can see like a piece of chocolate. It's not like a collectible through a hole in the wall that you can't actually reach. And basically what that was is that was meant to be an entrance to the area, like leading you into the area, but they couldn't finish the area. So they cut that content out, but then they made a conscious decision to leave the hole with the piece of chocolate you can't see deliberately to annoy players.
That's good.
I mean, the game breaks the wall all the time. You know, Conker talks about, you know, he talks about like having to go through monotonous sections. He pokes fun at the shallow premises of other games. Yeah, they break that fourth wall quite a few times in this game. So there's death sequences where he encounters a skeleton named Greg who attempts to make logic over the concept of multiple lives. Also, too, they made all the bosses take four hits to kill because they didn't want to be like every other game that takes only three.
Oh.
So, I mean, they did a lot of interesting things to try to like stand out, you know.
They did a very damn good job of that, knowing the game. I mean, it's one of those games that when people think like, oh yeah, I know Conker's Bad Fur Day, it's a cult classic. I mean, come on.
They had a cut ending, like a planned an ending that was cut too. It was going to be called the lockup ending. It was going to occur when Conker beat the final boss and died at the same time. I know that's rare, but the fact that they planned this was kind of funny. The deal was that everything was going to become static
except for Conker, who would kind of fall to the ground after briefly being frozen during a dive. And then there would be audio of the programmers arguing about this bug. And then Conker was going to make a deal with the programmers to remove the boss in exchange for not telling someone named Tony about it. So they were going to break the fourth wall with a cut ending too.
It's too bad that never made it to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of really, really great stuff planned. They wanted to do the end credits as a blooper reel that was like inspired by Toy Story 2, but those animations couldn't be completed in time. So just a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. For those of you that don't know, Conker is basically... Conker is a greedy, hard-drinking squirrel who has to return home to his girlfriend after a night of binge drinking, basically. And this game is designed for mature audiences. It has graphic violence, alcohol, tobacco use, profanity, vulgar humor, along with the fourth wall breaks and the pop culture references that we just talked about. So, you know, if it's not obvious from that, it received an M for mature rating from the ESRB. Its ESRB specifically notes animated violence, mature sexual themes, and strong language. In case you're wondering, it was only at the time the second Nintendo distributed title to ever get a mature rating. The first actually came not even a year earlier, also developed by Rare, which was their 2000 first-person shooter, Perfect Dark.
Not familiar with that one.
And of course, really? You never played Perfect Dark? Another one of those that's typically regarded as like an excellent, excellent game for its time.
Yeah, never got a chance to.
You know, Nintendo was well known for releasing family-friendly games, and that made Conker's Bad Fur Day very controversial. Parents, being parents, didn't know any better, would see Nintendo and buy the game expecting more family-friendly entertainment, only to find it was anything but. That made a splash across the news outlets. Newspapers like the Wall Street Journal would report, you know, news stations about, you know, how crude and rude and nasty this game is. Nintendo themselves refused to acknowledge the game in their own Nintendo Power publication. The strategy guide to the game was packed in a black plastic bag as if it was pornography.
That's good. I didn't know that.
So it was a thing, but they weren't trying to market it to kids. They were marketing it to, I mean, at the time, I'm not even going to pretend, like me. It was, its main target demographic was like young adults. Like, and I mean, I was 17, 18 at the time. College males and frat boys, like, were their main target demographic. This game was advertised in bars and colleges, late night television, and adult magazines. They had an online campaign. It included a video ad called Girl Talk, which depicted a half-naked girl and a squirrel in bed after a night of partying.
Okay.
From March to April of 2001, Playboy magazine hosted its first ever video game-related tour, and that was a set of Conker's Bad Fur Day multiplayer competitions that were spread across 20 college campuses across the U.S., They played the multiplayer mode that's included with this game and could win prizes that included like signed copies of this game. It was interesting. It was like nothing else many of us had seen, because there wasn't a lot of mature games at the time. This is still early in all of this, right? So Conker's Bad Fur Day kind of stuck out for being that. It was released on March 5th, 2001 in North America. Nintendo of Europe actually refused to distribute it, so THQ stepped in, and THQ actually released it in Europe in April, a month later. Fun little fact. It was the highest-selling mature video game at the time in its first month of release, but it wasn't commercially successful because that only required it to sell about 55,000 copies at the time. And of course, we have mature games left and right now, so now we have that record in the millions, right?
Yeah, I would say so. It's quite a few.
And the game just, it never sold. It never sold. Interestingly enough, because of this, a new in-box copy of the original N64 version of Conker's Bad Fur Day, it's the fourth rarest Nintendo 64 title. Copies of it, complete in box, sell for between $500 and $700. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, if you ever find a sealed up copy of this, you snag it.
Man,
it did do well with critics, though. It's a rare game. Rare is a phenomenal studio. They make mostly good games. Its Metacritic score for critic ratings is a 92 out of 100. So this was no exception to. This is no exception to how well they do with games, right?
No, Rare had very rare exceptions to having bad games. That was a terrible try. Terrible try.
Yeah.
So it was rare for them to have a bad game.
I'm not gonna give you the whole plot, but I'm gonna take like bits and pieces out of it so you can understand the type of humor it has, right? So it starts out where you're Conker. You have a knight at a bar that's named the Cock and Plucker. And you party with all the people at this bar, and then you're drafted to fight a war. And then you like wander home to meet your girlfriend Barry, but it's a bit late. So like you end up going elsewhere. And that leads you on an adventure to just all sorts of really weird places. You know, you meet the Panther King and solve his problems. You have to save the Queen Bee from the nasty wasps. And then to do that, you have to go see the Barn Boys. God, you meet Count Bakula. You freaking listen to a concert by the Great Mighty Pooh. There's just so much weird, weird stuff in this game. There's so much weird stuff in this game. I don't even want to. Because by the time I delve into the plot more, it gets really weird and really crude. So.
It definitely does. This is, again, you know, we say this a lot. But this is one of those games that you just have to play. Or even if you don't want to play it, watch for yourself. Because it is, I can't say one of a kind. Because I'm sure that there are other games out there like it. But it was definitely one of a kind for its time. And it's ridiculous, but in a fantastic way.
Well, but that depends too. I agree with you. I like what it does with the breaking the fourth wall and all the references and everything, but it's very heavy on the potty humor, if the mighty Great Mighty Pooh wasn't any indication. So if that's not your thing, which normally I don't seek out potty humor, yeah, whatever. That doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just not normally what I seek out. Anyway,
Everyone's different, Dave. I mean, you know, some of us find that shit to be hilarious.
Okay. If potty humor is not your thing, you're not going to like it because it's heavy on the potty humor. But otherwise, it's different. It's unique. It's great. For sure. After the release of Conker's Bad Fur Day, the team at Rare started development on a sequel. Seaver eventually revealed that the game was going to deal with, at the end of this, Conker kind of becomes King Conker, and the sequel was going to be about his unsuccessful tenure as king. He was going to spend all of his treasury money on beer, parties, and hookers. He was going to make the kingdom go broke and then be thrown into prison, faced with the prospect of execution, and then the game was going to start with him like escaping from his prison and the like how that all played out, and they were going to call it Conker's Other Bad Fur Day. So they had it all planned out. But a year later in 2002, Microsoft ended up buying out Rare, like completely Nintendo and Rare's stakes. So it became a Microsoft property, and Microsoft indicated that they had no interest in such a project. So they canceled any other Conker game. They shut down the project basically.
Which is a damn shame.
Well, they brought it back.
Really?
Eventually, they made a remake of Conker's Bad Fur Day in 2005. It was released for the Xbox. It's called Conker Live and Reloaded. It featured updated graphics. The multiplayer aspect of the game now could be played over Xbox Live. It's slightly different. Microsoft asked the team at Rare to censor some further things in the game, so it's slightly different, not major though. But in general, people really like all the quality of life updates that it brings. And it sold okay. So after the release of Live and Reloaded, they began work on another title in the Conker universe, which was called Conker Getting Medieval. This one, though, was going to be a multiplayer game that wasn't going to solely feature Conker. But before they could really get anywhere with that, it was ultimately canceled, too. So we've seen Conker's Bad Fur Day more recently. It was included as part of the Rare Replay compilation for the Xbox One, which released, I think, in August of 2015, if my memory's serving me correctly. So, yeah, things are still going. And in case you didn't know, Rare's still kicking. They continue to be successful. They continue. They're still successful. What am I talking about? They made Kinect Sports. They made Viva Pinata. They brought back Killer Instinct. I think their most recent game was they remade Battletoads. So, I mean, they're still kicking. In fact, their biggest title is still kicking like every day. They made Sea of Thieves, which is probably one of the biggest like multiplayer games on Xbox Game Pass.
I genuinely didn't realize that. That's insane.
You didn't know Rare made Sea of Thieves?
I did not. No, I never really looked at the developer of it.
Fun fact, it in 1 month, literally the first week of April, or might be the second week of April, it releases for PlayStation 5. So it'll no longer be an Xbox exclusive next month.
I mean, PC, so I wouldn't say Xbox exclusive.
Well, so when we say Xbox exclusive, we don't really include PC because it's Game Pass platform. So, like, Xbox...
Okay, you got me there.
Xbox exclusive, it's like we have PlayStation exclusives, right? Like the Horizon Zero Dawn series, which is also not released on PC. We kind of exclude the Windows platform from that console exclusivity statement nowadays for whatever weird reason. So, but anyway, Windows, Xbox, and soon to be PlayStation 5, go play Sea of Thieves. I actually do play Sea of Thieves periodically, so.
Oh, it's a fantastic game.
Go be pirates. Arr.
And knowing that it's by Rare, it makes more sense, because, like I said earlier, it was a rare thing for them to have a bad game.
Ooh, wow. Well, I mean, once you know that, there is just a lot of... There's just a lot of, like there's stuff. You'll see other Rare characters in the game if you actually play Sea of Thieves. So, like, it's pretty obvious to recognize it. But yeah, that's it. That's the rude and crude Conker's Bad Fur Day. A game that started out as, like, just a generic 3D platformer. And they gave it, 3 years, pretty much, trudging along in... futile before an artist spoke up and said, hey, I've got this edgy idea, what do you think? And everyone was like, we're on board, let's do it. And they leaned into it, man. They leaned into it and then some, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And like you said, it's definitely over the top for someone who loves potty humor. This game is just fantastic. The jokes they make in it, the over the topness, it's, again, you got to give it at least a watch or a play if that is your style. But if it's not, avoid this one because it's bad.
Yeah, it is. But I don't know. That kind of crude humor doesn't offend me. So I enjoy its pop culture references, and it's a unique platformer for sure. It's unlike, I don't think there really are other things like it because of, I just don't think there's other things like it. I think it's unique. And obviously, with a 92 out of 100 rating, it's a good game. It's a good game. It's just a fact. It's a good game. The question is whether or not the content is for you. That's what you have to decide. So anyway, that's that. I mean, Rare has a fantastic library. You know, like I said, they've done other games like Kinect Sports and Killer Instinct. And in particular, they did Donkey Kong Country. That was a big title for them. And we did that as a whole episode. And of course, if you want to check out any of our OAT episodes, you can do so by going to our website, which is www.memorycardlane.com. Rob, what else can people do on our website?
Well, Dave, over on our website, you can find a calendar of our future episodes. Maybe there's a topic that you are interested in. You want to let Dave and I know about it. Well, you can also find a link to our Discord where you can do exactly that. You can come tell Dave and I about some future topics. Maybe you have a little bit of crazy information about those. Maybe you just want to shoot the shit. You know, whatever. We're cool dudes. We enjoy talking to people. So feel free to come on down there and start a conversation. You can find a link to our Patreon where you can help support us and get access to ad-free and unedited versions of each of our episodes. You can also find a link to our social medias where I am on several platforms as Rob_O_Raptor and Dave.
I can be found on various platforms as David_is_wrong. So if you see a guy and his name is David and he's wrong, it's pretty much me.
Each week,
we tell you a story. It's about something relevant to the current week in gaming history. I usually pick the release date for a game or console and use an excuse to tell you the history of the game, the people who made it, the studios who created it, the technology that went into it, just bringing all the pieces together to try to teach you something new, because that's the goal. When we teach you each topic, we hope to teach you something new. We hope to teach you something about its inspiration. We hope to teach you something about what it gave back to the world in its legacy. One of the best parts about sitting down and get to do this every week is, in order to do each episode, we have to do research. And when we do research, we learn. I mean, literally, my whole goal is to try to find something different that you may not have known about this game. And usually if it's something I didn't know about this game, it's a win. So I get to learn every week and I get to teach you guys what I learn every week. And I love it. And in recognition of this beautiful cycle of teaching and learning, we talk about our takeaways. So, Rob, what did you learn today?
Well, I think that my favorite thing has to be Rare's baldiness, in that they reverse engineered the Famicom. That takes some serious cojones right there. And, you know, like you said, it could have gone either way. It's fortunate for them that it went well, and extremely well at that. But, you know, it's just crazy to think. They found a way to do what was deemed impossible, and look where it took them.
That is very true. Took them to Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves. You got that right, Dave. Ignore everything else. Just, it took them straight to Sea of Thieves.
That's it. That's where they're at.
The second best pirating game there is.
That's exactly right. What's the first?
Black Flag.
Yeah, I kind of knew you were going to say that.
Of course, but I mean, you know, it's Assassin's Creed, and that's one of my favorites. That's kind of hard to go wrong.
Sid Meier's Pirates would like a word with you.
I actually haven't tried that one, so I mean, can't fairly critique it.
Yeah, it's tough because it's aged by like 30 years now. So.
Oh, yeah. See, that it just doesn't fare up then.
Yeah, I know.
You know how it goes.
I do.
But that's it for me, Dave. So what's your big takeaway from today?
I didn't know much about the development of this game, so I had no clue it started out as cute squirrel mascot Conker collecting nuts with his girlfriend Barry, and then I didn't know that they got frustrated with it and pivoted to rude and crude, rude, nasty, mature title, Conker's Bad Fur Day. So,
Which is also a fantastic thought.
Well, it's fun, and I've played this a lot. I mean, I remember playing the original, and then Live and Reloaded, I lived with Eric, who has been on our show before, and we played through it. We might have played the original together first, and then played Live and Reloaded 2. So, I mean, I've played through this, both versions, a couple times. So, and it just, I don't know, it's funny to me. It's interesting. It's different. I'm not big on 3D platformers from this time period, like the Banjo-Kazooies and the, I don't know, Crash Bandicoots and Spyros and all that of the world, just that was not my thing. But this one was
fun. In other
words,
he was bad at them.
I was, very much. Yeah. All I can think when you say that are like horror story, like I have nightmares about the boulder chasing after me in Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, everyone does. So those were some of the most frustrating missions there were. I mean, you could be good at Crash Bandicoot, and it made it so much worse when you would just fall down a damn pit and just be like, what the hell, man? What's going on?
I think part of my problem, too, is I tend to want to collect everything. And, you know, this is still early on when the internet wasn't a whole thing. And so, like, collecting when you don't have resources is sometimes frustrating, depending on how you look at it. So
doesn't mean you can't go back now and finally get that 100%.
That's true. That's very true. So, yeah, that'll do it. Rob, before I take it out of here into next week, is there anything else you'd like to add to today's episode?
Of course there is, Dave. As always, I want to take one quick moment to say thank you so much to all of our listeners. We hope that you get a little bit of rude, crude, and funny humor out of listening to us week in and week out, and we appreciate you joining us for the journey.
We sure do. Very much so. Well, that wraps up our wild journey through the cheeky world of Conker's Bad Fur Day. I hope that you've enjoyed this nostalgia trip, maybe learned a thing or two about the misadventures of our favorite foul mouth squirrel. Next week, though, we're giving up the ground game and we're heading into the stars. We're going to be taking a cosmic odyssey, exploring the history of Star Raiders. So get those spacesuits ready and prepare yourself for an intergalactic battle as we take yet another trip down memory card lane to the thing.
Doom, ba, 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 doom.